Blog Talk Radio.
My co-host, Old DB, it's Uncle Fester again for the sixth show. Are you on the line? Are you there?
Hey, what's going on, man? Back for another week. What's happening?
Yep, number six. They haven't got us yet.
Yep. Back for another ugly week on Blisterfish.
Yep. Just cranking the metal and trying to get everything straight. What we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to have kind of a different show. It's everybody knows, the listeners may not know all of them. I'm pretty much an NFL draft nick, so I got the gear on. I got the sitting in my recliner, kicking back. I got gonna get the queso dip ready for tomorrow, some drinks, and get ready for the NFL draft, which starts tomorrow. So we're on NFL draft eve tonight, so we're gonna cover that for a while in the middle of the show and towards the end. And just all things NFL draft. So if anybody wants to call in, 646-595-4686, call in for that. We'll probably start hitting that in about a half hour. And just want to see how you're doing, Dennis. How was your week? And what are you drinking, buddy?
Oh man, I'm sticking with the Oberon. I actually went and bought some beer today, and I staring at the beer selection for about 5 minutes and said fuck it and got some more Oberon because it tasted so good. So it's hard to beat the beer, man.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm doing something a little different tonight. I got the I don't know if you heard of the brewery Dragon Mead, which is right here by in Warren, Michigan, right by my house. And I got the Final Absolution, which is a strong it's a Belgian style triple ale. It's real strong. It's like 10% or something, but it tastes good. It's real smooth. It's got a little bit of a neat aftertaste to it, and it's not real hoppy or anything. It's real bitter, and it's real good. I like it a lot. I've had it a few times before, and it just caught my eye in the store. So I picked up a six of this, so it's pretty good.
Nice. I'll have to try it sometime.
Yeah, it's a real small local brewery. But it's pretty cool stuff. I like their saying. It says, it's better to curse the darkness than to light thy hand on fire. which is a true true statement.
Right on, man.
I would kill everyone in this room for a drop of sweet beer.
Yeah.
That's
so what's going on all
favorite.
Week, man? I got to get Homer in there early. What's been going on with you? What's been getting in your ear? What's been pricking your conscience? You got anything going on?
I don't know, man. I wanted to hit up and follow up. You know, we talked last week kind of extensively about executions and whether they should happen or not, or if people deserve it. I guess the general consensus that seemed to be between the two of us is, people deserve to be executed, but they probably shouldn't be the way things are so fucked up nowadays, what's been going on with everything. And we talked last week about that guy in Oklahoma that took like 30 minutes to die. His name was Clayton Lockett.
Right.
And,
yes.
Dude, there's all kinds of nasty shit coming out about that still. They were saying that they didn't notice his collapsed vein after they, injected the lethal injection into him for 20 minutes. So he was writhing there for a while. And then they couldn't find, first of all, they couldn't even find a vein in him. So I'm wondering if it was even a doctor that injected the guy. They ended up injecting him in his groin, dude, in his fucking groin to kill him. What a way to go out, man. Not only can't even get a shot in the arm, man. You got to get one in the fucking dick punch, and then
hasta la vista, baby.
And then take 30 minutes to finally die of a heart attack because they fucked up the execution. So you know, it just reinforces to me. I don't even know what the guy did to be executed for. I mean, I'm sure it was something heinous or whatever, but. You know, just the way these things are going, and going back to that study they made, finding 2 out of every 25 people are actually innocent on death row.
Right.
You know, fucking going down that way, not even being involved in the crime you're being killed for, and you're getting a fucking needle right up the dick for fucking, you know, something you didn't even do. So that in itself, dude, it, you know. Got to go away, man. So there, I guess even Obama's made some comments about it, and the governor of Oklahoma, I guess it's a lady, and she said, it shouldn't change the way we do anything around here.
Yeah.
I want you to kill every golfer on the course.
But if I kill all the golfers, they're going to lock me up and throw away the key.
Carl knows.
That's it.
Like you said, most of the way we do things too is it all goes back to the archaic religious bullshit. You know, the eye for the eye, and
right.
You know, a lot of the stuff that we do. It's like we think we're being tough on crime and we got the death penalty that it makes everybody feel safe. You know,
yeah,
it's all a bunch of bullshit. You know, and,
yeah, I mean, you know, again, they're so worried about a woman and her vagina when it comes to, you know, and whatever else, her uterus or inner parts when it comes to carrying a baby. But once that baby's born, they don't give a fuck, man. They'd rather just boot it across the fucking room than think twice about that thing once it's past that vagina. It's you're right. It's all back to the religious thing I'm willing to bet, again, if you go back to people that are atheists, I'm willing to bet most atheists are against capital punishment and executing people.
Yeah.
You know, and when you drill down to it, it's most likely carried out due to religious issues, just like you said, you know, just like we were talking about. So another fucking tentacle wrapped around our society of something we've been, you know, that's droned into us for us to accept. You know, however long, all because of religion. You know, everything else we've been talking about, man. You know, the circumcisions and shit, man. Cutting off pieces of your dick just for religion, or clitorises, or you know, the genital mutilations that go on all the time because of religion, and it's crazy, man. It used to be they were talking about that shit was supposed to, like, quote unquote, you know, stop diseases and shit on your dick. But that's been proven false also. It has nothing to do with, you know. So
they've already proven,
So, you know, man, it's just it's some crazy shit. And I don't know. Hopefully they'll do something about it. Finally Obama's been drawn into something, and he almost had to, of just the way this execution went down and how much publicity it gets. And nowadays, it almost seems like that's what he's reacting to, man. If it's headline news, then he finally deals. He addresses it. You know, if it's not headline news, then he doesn't talk about it.
That's kind of a state issue, though, isn't it? They're basically the state runs executions, or they pretty much set up how they're going to do it, and they have their own laws about it and everything. So
if it was passed on the federal level, if it was made illegal at a federal level, then they wouldn't be able to do it anymore.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean,
yeah. Well,
so that's where you would have to get involved. Is
marijuana
that would
is
have
legal
to...
at a federal level?
What's that?
marijuana is still legal,
right,
at a federal level. States are still doing it.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum, man. One, you're killing people, and the other, in my opinion, saving people, certainly from a lot of pretty nasty diseases that they're finding out about now. You know, we're talking about Colorado starting to see an uptick in people that are moving out there because of, you know, all these kids have these diseases, and the only way that they can be cured of them, especially these, like these kids having seizures, epileptic seizures, and other kinds of seizures caused by different kinds of illnesses and stuff. And one of the few things they found so far has been marijuana. So there's been numerous families with kids that have these seizures, you know, and the only way they can stop them is through marijuana use. They're moving out to Colorado, man, to save their kids.
I thought you were going to say there was an uptick in people moving out there because a bunch of stoners wanted to go out there to get high.
So probably that too.
Yeah.
They're definitely seeing they're seeing an uptick in visitors, man. They're seeing a lot of weed you know, weed vacations going on.
Oh yeah.
People are flying out there just smoke weed.
Vacation.
Yeah.
Go out there and eat the goodies. I seen on that one show on HBO, that show Vice, they had the guy at the store out there, and man, they got stuff. They got like pop. It looks like Red Bull. It's pop, and it's
everything.
Not, THC infused pop. I'm like, oh my god, that would be so dangerous.
I know.
Just slamming that down, you know. That's terrible.
Getting all high and charged at the same time, man.
Yeah. That'd be
weird. Yeah, they're infusing it in everything now. You know, they're boiling down into butters and making it into foods and shit. And I also saw that they've got vending machines now. And I don't know where they're going to be placing the son of a bitches, but I've seen that they've got marijuana vending machines in Colorado.
Yeah.
So I just saw them it was a pot shop in Colorado, and they just received a couple vending machines. So I don't know if it's just going to be right in their shop. Maybe that's it. You know, you just walk in and, use your debit card and walk out.
It gives you a new meaning to the word, to the candy bar Snickers here, you know. you get your Funyuns and your weed infused candy, you know, at the same time.
Right. You don't have to go to the meet the dude under the bridge for your weed. You can just go to the vending machine.
Yeah. Get right out of the vending machine and your Funyuns.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I wonder what, you know, all these fucking people in Colorado still, I haven't heard anything about them being released. You know, I'm sure there's tens of thousands, you know, as they are in every state, of people that are in jail for, you know, solely marijuana or you know, non-violent crime. And usually it's tied into weed, you know.
Yeah, we were asking about that before.
Yeah, I haven't heard of them being released. They were talking about it last I heard, but you would hope that would happen because that's got to be a bitch for the dude that got sent up for, you know, bringing in 20 pounds of weed and getting caught and sent up river for, you know, 5 to 7, and he's looking out his jail cell behind bars, and there's some dude standing right outside the prison smoking weed, you know, being like, yeah, I'm out here for something you went to prison for that's not legal.
Yeah, that's soft.
Oh, white guy.
Hopefully they'll do something about it, because you got to know those people that have been arrested for marijuana crimes. They've got to be going crazy in jail.
I don't know if there's some
kind
of thing.
What the fuck am I still doing in here?
Yeah, it seems like they would be able to reverse that, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, federally, if they could force them to do it, you know, force them to reverse all those decisions, or is that something the state has to do, or does the governor pardon them? Does he have to pardon all those people, thousands of people, or whatever
he
it is?
Would.
I don't know what the hell they...
Well, he can pardon, you know, he's got the power to pardon them. So, but I would imagine that they'd probably have to run something through, you know, Colorado legislature to make it free and clear so those people can just walk, you know, anybody that's been, but, you know, they're probably just not going to release everybody. I would imagine they're going to have to review every case and be like, okay, you had a gun involved, so you got to stay in jail. You did not, so they're going to have to break some of that shit down. But, you know,
No, you're doing it all wrong.
You know, it's been going on for like a year now, man. I guess it's been legalized. Was it this year or it was this year, right, or last? I'm trying to think of when it was legalized.
Started this year? Yeah, I don't think it's been a year.
No, not yet.
But November. Since November?
Look at, you know, I mean, weed is still classified with the DEA as, I forgot what level it is, but it's on the same level as heroin, you know, cocaine and shit is how dangerous it's considered. Which is absolutely ridiculous. And one of the main arguments that the government is using, the DEA and drug, you know, and all these fucking drug enforcement agencies fighting the weed, the weed issue is that, you know, our neighborhoods are going to decline and none of that shit's happened. Crime has increased. And in fact, I'm willing to bet it's decreased, especially obviously involved in marijuana crimes, but you know, none of that shit's happened. There was all these dire warnings, fucking reefer madness bullshit, even, you know, modern-day reefer madness bullshit. And, of course, none of it happened, man. It's just people want to smoke weed for one reason or the other. You know, I know someone here that's got a card in Michigan, and when she went to get it, you know, she had to wait in a lobby, and it's just a small place in a small town. And the place was packed. You know, every month they get a doctor that comes down there and issues prescriptions for weed. And when she went in there to wait, she said almost the entire lobby was filled with, like, old people, man. It was people in wheelchairs and canes and you know, and she said probably about 25% of it were you know, I don't even know if it was, you know, people under 30 maybe. She said, but almost 75% of the people in the lobby were old people that, you know, they know what good it does them, you know, with whatever ailments they got. You know, it's going to happen, man. Obviously, it's helping so many people out. This lady, I work up at an art gallery here on occasion. I've got some art hanging up just right in town here in our small town. We actually have a little pretty nice little art gallery. This lady came in, man. She had just had her third surgery, and she had surgery on her neck, and they had to go in through her fucking her throat, the front of her neck, have surgery on her spinal cord and the back of her neck, but they had to go in through the front. So she had this big ass contraption on her neck and everything, and she had to have been in her 60s, and she was just in recently, and even she was talking about it. She was thinking, she was like, man, you know, maybe I need to think about trying to get a prescription for marijuana, because she's like, all these drugs that have been prescribed to me, none of them work for my pain, or they just make me, you know, good fall asleep or whatever, you know. So, and I said, you should try it. My stepmom, her sister, who's in her 70s, late 70s, has a prescription for it in Canada because of her rheumatoid arthritis. Same deal there, man. It's the only thing that works for her, you know, and she's in her 70s. So my dad and my stepmom were, you know, they had bought into the, oh, it's so dangerous and, you know, it kills people, whatever, you know. And it's funny now that her sister is smoking the weed and she's in her 70s with the, you know, with smoking it for a lot of health issues that they have, you know, the bad arthritis and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, now they accept it. They didn't believe me. The years and years I told them that it wasn't dangerous and the health benefits of it. They didn't want to hear about it from me, you know. But man, her sister tells them about it, you know, suddenly it's you know, an acceptable practice, medical practice, you know.
You're like, listen, it's not addictive. I've been smoking this stuff every day for years.
All right.
<not addicted." laughs>
You can't get hooked on it. I should know. I've been smoking it for 30 years.
I've never been hooked.
Yeah, so now they're all good with it. This is where the tide is turning, man. I mean, you know, both my dad and my stepmom, they're in their 70s. They've been against it their whole lives. They've been taught how terrible it is, and now it's, you know, they accept it entirely as a, you know, form of medical treatment. So it's come a long way.
Right.
I never thought, man, when I was in college and, you know, I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing to pay for college with it, you know, that it would ever be legal. I never thought in my lifetime it would ever, ever be legal. That's why you'll see...
Coming to get you.
That's why you'll see very few pictures of me in that era, because I was always doing things I probably shouldn't have been doing around that time period, man.
Right.
So I'm always like, get that camera the fuck out of here, man, you know. But it was all, you know, all nonviolent. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't the hardened criminal packing heat and you know, busting down deals and stuff, you know. It's just, you know.
Isn't that a daisy?
Oh, man, that's great.
So, you know, so I've known certainly for decades now, man, but I think a lot of people that were so against it are finally coming around to it. It's good to see.
I know what you were doing out there at college.
Why do you think I was smoking the weed, man? That went hand in hand.
Yep.
There's no better line to bring the honeys back than see if they want to smoke one down.
I got a quarter pounder here, baby. Let's go back and blaze.
Yeah.
Man,
those
funny.
Were the days. Boy, I got so many stories about those days. It's not even funny, man. I can't even tell three quarters of them. Probably still in, you know, in public.
It's just going to turn this R-rated show into an X-rated show.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, man? What's been going on with you this last
just
week
laying
or
low,
so?
Same old thing.
Yeah.
Just, you know, watching a lot of TV, doing a little traveling and, you know, just screwing around, doing a little wrenching.
That's
a cartoon wrenching.
I see. All right.
That's great.
I've actually last couple weeks, man, I've had some shit commissioned for some art pieces, so I've been busting those out.
That.
I got one in process. I'm almost done with and I'm making for a family member, so I'm selling to him for super cheap. But I don't know, it's come along. I got some shit in the gallery. It's been selling some glass pieces. I haven't made glass in quite a bit, so I got to get back into making some glass because I seem to be selling some out of that gallery. So I got to do some. I do a bunch of fused glass. What's that?
Oh, is that glass, or I seen you do like with a mosaic tile or something?
No, I make fused glass too. I got a kiln, dude.
What was that? Yeah.
And I can make, like, you know, fused glass where you can fuse two or three or four different pieces of glass together, and then and then you kind of put them into a mold and shape them into a mold. It's called slumping. And so I'm making like dinnerware, you know, and pieces of glass dinnerware and shit and things like that. And I actually made I've sold a couple sushi sets lately out of the gallery that I made. So, you know, I make all kinds of different shit out of glass right now too. But like I said, I've had those commissions on those mosaic pieces, so I haven't even touched any of my kiln in probably a month and a half or so, man. So I need to, and I'm out of clear glass, which is like a base for everything. You know, usually you get kind of your colored, textured glass in a layer of clear somewhere in the piece, and so I got to go run and get some glass. So. But, I don't know. I'm selling it. And the lady that bought the latest one, man, she bought it for her daughter. She brought her daughter into the gallery, and her daughter loved it. So she bought it for a wedding present for her. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I seen some of your mosaic stuff, the tile and stuff you were doing.
Yeah.
You put on some of the pictures you put on Facebook. A couple of things were pretty cool looking.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, man. Yeah, you know, it takes time. That mosaic takes a lot of time. Especially that pictorial shit, man. I made like I took a picture when we were up on vacation up to Point Iroquois Lighthouse and the Lake Superior in UP.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I made that into a mosaic. Those pictorial ones take fucking forever, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm making a pictorial of a house, of someone's house, but they just they just take forever, man, because it's every piece has to be cut and handled 5-6 times before I can lay it down and place it onto the you know, backboard. So I don't know, man. I've been busting that out. I've been fucking out there in the middle of the night trying to, you know, get this thing done before Mother's Day when he wants it. So, so I've been fucking cranking that out. And I got some art shows coming up this summer that I'm going to be participating in. So hopefully I can sell off some more shit and make a little bit of cash that way.
That's cool.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I had a piece commissioned... it was about a month ago, and sold that and sent it out to New York City to someone who lives in New York City. So.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're keeping busy then.
Well, I'm trying, man. You know, as busy as you can be living out in the fucking middle of nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
Everything moves a little bit slower out here, man. That's part of the good thing I like about it. I'm not much for the rat race anymore, man. I try and avoid it whenever I can. I guess I just dip my toe in it every once in a while when I have to, and you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's. I hear you, man. It's nice having a peace like that. You know, be able to just, you know, sleep and not hear a bunch of noise all the time and everything.
Yeah.
I can dig it. Well,
Shit, dude! Noise, fuck, wait. You're lucky to see. I mean, you'd be amazed at like the stars and shit out here, you know, because there's no lights, you know. Just fucking. I mean, it's incredible. You can see like, you know, just vast clusters of stars that you wouldn't normally see in the city and stuff. And a lot of that. That's for sure, man.
You step outside.
Yeah.
It felt like you just stepped outside.
Yeah,
yeah,
there's
a
whole lot of
that,
man.
Like that. My parents live out in the UP out in the country, and the stars out there, it looks like you can just reach up and touch them. It's so, because there's no light. They have all types of light ordinances out there. You can't have bright lights or anything.
Really?
So they,
are they out there year-round?
Yeah, they live up there year-round.
Wow.
Yeah,
they how was their winter?
It's pretty brutal. Yeah. You know, they got a couple weeks ago, they had about five, six feet of snow still piled up on the side of the driveway.
Damn.
I'm sure it's all melted now, but,
you know,
they had snow right almost in May. Pretty brutal winter.
That's fucking way up there. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but, you know, you get up in the UP, you're as far north as, like, Maine and, you know, I mean, pretty similar to, you know, Minnesota,
Montana,
the northern reaches of Minnesota and shit once you get up in the UP. You know, it's the same, you know, same latitude.
Yeah, they get a lot of that. I think it's that lake effect snow and all that. I mean, it's just, you know, then they get the winds coming off the lake, which are really brutal. But they got a nice tree line that blocks their house. But the houses that are on, they're on the opposite side of the road. They're not right on the water, but. The house is like my aunt and uncle have a house right on the water there, and they just get the like shingles will blow off the roof, and you know parts of the roof will blow off, and they get really high winds up there in the winter. So it's pretty, but they don't live up there in the winter. My aunt and uncle.
Oh, they don't.
No, they have a house in Pennsylvania they live in. It's pretty brutal, so yeah.
Yeah, man. UP. You get up there, it's remote as hell too. You get away from, you know, you get in the middle or.
Yeah.
The western part of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it's like Alaska, man. I mean, you can go for quite a bit without seeing a house.
Yeah,
you know,
it's pretty.
In the middle of fucking pine trees and shit, and
they had bears up there and everything. Yeah, my parents have had bears in the backyard.
Yeah,
so,
yeah mountain lions and shit. There's mountain lions up there.
I tried to think if they've seen mountain lions. I know they have them up there.
I saw a picture of one, man, DNR, a Department of Natural Resources camera, just last year.
Yeah, well, they have them up there. I know they've seen, like, bobcats. I think they've seen a mountain lion. I know they've had wolves up there. They've got wolves, and so they don't have any moose up there anymore, I don't think. But they have black bears. I think they have mountain lions, bobcats. You don't see mountain lions that much, though.
Yeah, it's wild
elk,
as a motherfucker up there, man. It's definitely wolverines
it's
on occasion, and
you don't see that much, but I think they have them.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Well, wolverines are hard to see, man. Those things are like, you know, they're pretty.
Yeah,
invasive.
They hide.
Yeah,
right.
But man, yeah, it's you got to be ready for that shit. But it's so beautiful up there, and it's, you know, I mean, man, I just, you know, just cross, once you cross the bridge, it's like, you know, the Mackinac Bridge, it's just like a different world, man. Tequamanon Falls and Pitchock Rocks and, you know, so many
pretty
lighthouses. And incredible.
Yeah. Very impressive. Yeah, it's a Pitcher Rock tour. If you ever get a chance to go up there, I recommend that for anybody to get up there and take that Pitcher Rock tour. It's real beautiful going along the coastline, and it's just the colors are so beautiful. But you got to make sure you bring a coat with you, because even we went up there, it was 80 degrees down by my parents' house. We went up there. They live on the south side of the peninsula. We went on the north side to the tour, and it dropped to the low 50s, and we went out on a lake, and it was freezing, man. I had just a t-shirt and shorts on. I froze my ass off. It was windy. It was really cold. So, yeah, you need to bring a hoodie with you or something.
Yeah, it's like wind whipping across Superior, man. The Lake Superior never really warms up. And it's still iced over
cold.
In spots, man. They're saying that some of the Great Lakes are still iced over a little bit.
Yeah, they're not completely. They're not 100% thawed. That's true.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You see those pictures over the winter, man? Like, the lake's got, what, 93% iced over, 95%? And, man, it looked like the Arctic, man, from a satellite
picture. They have those giant ice walls where the ice piles up super high, like 30 feet in the air, and it's like a giant ice cave in the lake.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. It keeps crashing in on top of each other, and it just keeps building up. It's so crazy.
Yeah,
I've never really seen it like that before. I mean, I've been up there quite a few times, but I've never really seen that like that.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild.
It was a crazy fucking winter. I think we're going to have another one just like it to this year.
I don't know. I think they're predicting it won't be bad, but, you know, who knows?
I hope not.
I don't know. I mean, I think they predicted this one to be pretty bad, you know, this year, but next year. They said
all fucking cool and shit. We didn't have one major storm the entire summer. And I was thinking, I knew right then, man, it was towards August, and we didn't have one tornado warning. We barely even had it, like a storm that came through that would whip shit around, you know, and I was thinking, man, we're fucked this winter. I knew it.
Right.
By the time August came around and it was about 70 the whole summer except for a few days, and I was thinking, holy shit, we're going to have a wicked winter, and we sure as hell we did. I knew it was coming.
Right.
So I don't know, man. Who knows about the whole global warming thing? I think something's happening. They keep calling the global climate change deniers crazy and conspiracy theorists and whatever else. And I still think that it's hard to believe that mankind is causing all of it. I mean, they got to have a hand in some of it. I mean, we're running, you know, billions of machines every day that produce heat and pollutants and toxins. Some of it's got to be happening. But, you know, it's been a natural change forever, man. We had an ice age just 10,000 years ago, right? You know, and that receded, and certainly we weren't all driving around cars while it receded, you know, and this shit comes and goes, man. I don't know. In the end, who knows what, I mean, for the most part, there's certainly some shit we could do to fucking stop the onset of a lot of it, I think, you know, but I still have a hard time believing mankind's responsible for all of it. It seems ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Life is fragile, that's for sure, because, like you say, you know, if we just run out of honeybees or earthworms, we're done within a year. So, I mean, there's so many little things that can happen that could kill us off, you know.
Yeah, well, you see all these ice sheets dropping off into the ocean and shit. That's definitely, I mean, you think, holy shit.
The thing is
nobody's really seeing the effects here. I mean, maybe we're seeing some more hurricanes and maybe tornadoes. It's still, again, very hard to attribute to man-made activities. I think it's going to take something like, you know, these massive ice sheets melting off, and finally it starts flooding parts of Florida or New York City or something.
Yeah.
And then people will finally be like, oh, fuck, we probably should do something about this. You know?
Well,
it's going to take something like that before actually something's done about it.
Set up the whole ice shelf. If the whole ice shelf melts, they said Paris will be flooded, and all the coastline cities like New York will be way underwater.
Yeah, so, yeah, Florida will barely be there. They're talking about a rise of 10 feet of the oceans.
Yeah.
And Florida would just be a minor little, a minor little, peninsula of what it used to be. I mean, so, but, you know, again, it's going to have to take some of that shit to happen, especially for the hardcore Republican deniers of it that, you know, absolutely don't believe that it's happening at all. They're going to have to see it for their eyes for it to, you know.
Yep. There we go. The Republic's going down again.
they'll believe a leprechaun in the sky, all you know, and create laws surrounding the mighty leprechaun in the sky. But you know, anything like that, they got to wait until they see it. So I'm kind of like that too, though, in that part. I mean, I'm there with Republicans somewhat. I do believe, though, we need to, you know, we got to get away from fucking fossil fuels. I mean, oil is leaking everywhere all the time. You know, we have massive oil leaks all over the world all the time. And we just got to get away from fucking petroleum, man. We
just
have to.
We're a slave to those companies and a slave to the Middle East. It's just,
Well, you know, we're the security firm for them, man. We're the, you know, the U.S. military is the security firm for the BPs and the Exxons and the Mobils and the, you know, I mean, that's, we go over to Iraq and take them over and secure the oil fields, man. That's, you know, that was the first thing they did, man. We invaded Iraq. They went straight to, you know, the oil fields to try and secure whatever they could. You know, that was the first thing they wanted to make sure they held. So, you know, all about natural resources, and that's the thing, you get these fucking windmills and solar panels and even they've got these wave machines that produce energy now and all kinds of different fucking shit.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, it removes us entirely from that whole process. So there's a lot of people making a lot of money off of it that don't want us to go away from that, you know?
Well, I don't know where it's all going, but I'll tell you one thing. Here's a good segue to the next segment. Well, one thing that'll take your mind off all these problems, which is what I've been doing a lot over the last few weeks and even months, is I've been following the NFL draft, and we did promise we were going to do some NFL draft segment tonight on the show, even though this show is, you know, you're real up on current events, and, you know, we talk a lot about conspiracy theories and current events, and we talk a lot about religion. That's what the show is mainly about, the Blitzkrieg Chris show, but... since it is the NFL draft eve, we are gonna get into that tonight. And if anybody wants to call, we've got the number 646-595-4686. Call in with your questions, comments, or if you want to debate, you know, whatever your team, who's supposed to take what we're supposed to do. I don't have anything specifically set up that I want to talk about. Just basically kind of blabulate about the draft and just over the years and just what's been going on and, you know, what I think, my opinions, and maybe some predictions of what's going to go on tomorrow and Friday and Saturday. One thing we could talk about is, you know, this. I think it started last year. It's kind of a newer format. They have the first round is on Thursday night at 8. Then they have the second and third rounds on Friday night. And then they have fourth to seventh rounds on Saturday. And it used to be just it was on Saturday and Sunday during the day and into the night. You'd have, like, the first three rounds on Saturday and then the fourth through seventh rounds on Sunday. And I always liked that, you know, because I would just blow a weekend, you know, sitting there. And when I wasn't working, and I would watch it, you know, and just have a bunch of snacks or have a little party or just sit around and watch all that and just, you know, rooting for the Lions. I was always, you know, a big Lions fan, Detroit Lions first, and then a kind of Oakland Raiders fan second. So I kind of grew up an Oakland Raiders fan as a little kid, and then when the Lions got up, Billy Sims, I became a Lions fan in the 80s, so I've kind of followed both teams. So I've been doing a lot of
that team, dude, the
80s,
the Sims and Bubba Baker.
Oh, yeah.
And they had Another One Bites the Dust every time they won a game, you know, playing, and it was always a huge theme for them. And, You know, of course they had some fucking subpar quarterback even then.
Yeah, well, that's what killed them.
Yeah, always.
They didn't have a good quarterback.
They even had a good quarterback with Landry.
Landry was good in the early 70s. Yeah, he had a couple good years.
Yeah.
He was a good guy. He could run, too. He was real mobile. That's
yeah.
a lot of people, you know, they're so down in the Lions because they had that horrible 10-year stretch with Millen, you know, Matt Millen running the team. But actually, you know, for a team that hasn't went to the Super Bowl, they've actually had good eras and good teams. I mean, they won three championships in the 50s. You know, they basically owned the 50s with, you know, Bobby Lane quarterbacking.
Yeah.
And they had some really good teams in the early 60s. They didn't win championships. But back then, hardly anybody went to the playoffs. So they could have like a 10-4 season when they played 14 games, and they wouldn't even make the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, it was like four teams in the playoffs or whatever. It was like nothing, you know, hardly any teams played in the playoffs. So they had some good teams in the early 60s. They kind of fell off in the late 60s. Then the early 70s, I think 71 through like 73, 74, they had good teams then. They had a couple double-digit win teams. They went to playoffs. They barely lost to Dallas, and I think it was 70. That team, I think, should have went to the Super Bowl. They had Steve Owens, was a Heisman Trophy running back from Oklahoma, white guy. He was real good. And they had a Mel Farr, superstar. They had good players. Yeah, Mel Farr, superstar. And then, you know, they were terrible through, like, kind of mid-late 70s. And then the early 80s, in the 80s, they got good again with Sims, where they were, you know, going to the playoffs a few times. Then they got bad again, you know, from 86 to, like, 89 when they got Barry. Then in the 90s, they were pretty good, you know, but through all that time, they never really had a star quarterback. And I, you know, I won't hide it. I'm a Matt Stafford supporter. I think he's got all the talent in the world. He just, you know, the guy came in as a 21-year-old kid to the historically worst team in NFL history, 0-16 Lions, got battered, got the shit kicked out of him for 2 years, got beat up and hurt a bunch of times. And then at 23 in his third year, when he played his first full year, he set all 50 NFL records, and they won 10 games and they went to the playoffs. So the guy could do it, man. He's got all the talent in the world. He just, you know, he was a young guy, but you know, he's not young no more. Now he's 26. You know, it's time to. They got a new coaching staff, new system, and everything. So it's time they got to move on now. They got to start. You know, they got to start winning some of these games. Like last year, I think there was a stat that last year they were in the lead in the fourth quarter in every game except for one.
Wow.
I mean, if you're a shitty team and you're bad, you're going to get blown out at least a few times. You're not going to be winning in the fourth quarter in every game except for one. In 15 games, they were winning in the fourth quarter, and then they lost.
Well, it shows you that the defense didn't have a fucking closer attitude to them. They let too many games slip away, you know. That Colts team is one that comes to my mind. Luck drives in the fucking final drive of the whole game and scores with no time left to beat them. When Stafford did the same, just what he left, what did they leave? Like a minute on the clock, and then Luck gets the ball back, the Colts and Luck, and then they drive down the field in about a minute and score with almost no time left on the clock to win it. You know, after Stafford had made this drive down the field to score with about a minute left, and our defense couldn't stop him with a minute left.
Well, that
you know, I've always been
a
homer myself, man. I lived out in Colorado for 15 years, and even when I was out there, you know, we'd watch the Lions games. We'd try and go out to the bar if it wasn't on TV, because it almost never was out there. You know, you never saw the Lions out there. And, of course, everything is the fucking Broncos, dude. This is a Broncos fan for that I found out. A Broncos fan is one that loves the Broncos to death, is insane about the Denver Broncos and everything they do, but really doesn't know a whole lot about football. I found
it. Yeah, they're not
as of course, there's exceptions to that. But, man, your average Denver Broncos fan is an absolute maniac about the Broncos and just doesn't know a lot about the NFL. That's kind of what I came to the conclusion of. They know anything about any other team except the Broncos, you know. They could name the third string tight end and the backup offensive guard or whatever, but they didn't know anybody any other team, you know.
No.
So, gotta give it to them, man.
They're
definitely they're fanatics about their football, but you know, it's solely the Broncos normally.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't love watch any other teams or anything like that.
No.
But they they're even worse at hockey. Colorado, the hockey fans, you can tell they're they really don't go hockey. They don't really
and they were spoiled as hell because, you know, they moved out there from the Quebec, you know, the Nordiques, you know, moved right out to Colorado and turned into the Avalanche. And they had a winning, they won the Stanley Cup a couple years after they moved out there. So they thought that that was just how things worked, you know. Oh, shit, man, we're winning Stanley Cups. This is going to be easy shit. And, you know, they figured out real quick once Waugh started getting old and shit that that's not how it works, man.
Right.
So, I was out there, and that was when, at the height of it, when the Red Wings and the Avalanche, man, they'd fight every game. They were in the playoffs together, and I saw a bunch of playoff games out at the Pepsi Center between the two of them, and those were some exciting games, and they fought the shit out of each other, and man, that was killer. And I actually saw a Lions game at Mile High, and that was when they weren't doing well. I forgot which year it was when they played out there, and they almost beat them. I think the game ended up like 19-16 or something like that, and the Lions were winning for most of the game, and that crowd was just dead silent, man. It was at Mile High, it was 80,000 people, and you could hear a fucking pin drop as the Lions are beating them most of the game.
Yeah, the last time they were out there, they kicked the living shit out of him. It was when Tebow was quarterbacking, and it was before he got on his hot streak and won like six or seven in a row, or six out of eight, or seven out of eight, nine, or whatever it was. But they played the Lions, and I tell you what, he did not match up good against the Lions. They kicked the living crap out of him, and they sacked him a bunch of times, and they really knocked the shit out of him. It was kind of almost like when Michigan played Florida in the Orange Bowl that one year, and Tebow, I think he was just coming off his Heisman. It was the year after he won the Heisman. It was his junior year. And Michigan had about three or four pro players on the defense. He did score like 30-something points, but they still beat the shit out of him. They hit him. Like every time he threw the ball, they hit him. It was really they really put it to him. And it was actually a lot worse for Detroit, like really – beat the shit out of him pretty good. It was kind of cool. You know me, I'm not a Tebow fan because I can't stand the Christian rhetoric for one.
Yeah.
So, I can't stand that. I know I'm not saying it's ingenuine with him. I know, but it's just that indoctrination, that constant. He sounds like a robot, and it's just so sickening after a while. You know, it's just to the point where I can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, and they acted really like the motherfucker invented that shit or something. everybody out in Colorado was doing that bullshit. I'm thinking,
oh yeah, the T-boying and then
that fucking genuflecting shit. I'm thinking, fuck, man.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was invented before Tebow came along. But same deal there. Tebow comes around, and they're just blind to him. I'm fanatic about Tebow, he's so great. Of course, he did, tear off that string of wins, and then that playoff win where he made that great throw, but in the end, man, he one of those things where he didn't have enough to stick around, and no one out there really could see that. They're blinded by him winning these games.
That was
by
the problem.
Yeah, I mean, he won a couple games, and I think he had like 100 yards passing, if that.
Yeah.
He was running
really
the ball and. I don't know why the fucker didn't want to try and be like a running or a fullback or something,
He was dead set
about being a quarterback when he didn't have the skills. When he could, he had the skills of being a fullback or a tight end.
Yeah, he was good at running the ball, but he had no accuracy, no anticipation, and you could tell the receivers didn't like playing with him. I mean, as soon as he left, they just all started ripping him. All the receivers were like, they were just like, they couldn't wait for Peyton Manning to get there. As soon as Peyton Manning get there, they all start going to the Pro Bowls, all the receivers.
Right.
And their stats just go through the roof.
Tears off 5,000 yards in a season.
Yeah. He's completing like 7, 8, 9 passes a game, if that.
Yeah.
And Manning comes in and starts completing like 40 passes.
Yeah.
So that's money in their pocket. Those receivers, they don't want to play with him, They don't want to, all they want to, receiver would play with T-ball, all you're going to be doing half the time is blocking, you know, blocking
right.
downfield while he's running. I mean, it's, you know.
He was the highlight when he was there, like it or not, whether he did well or not, he was the highlight. And, you know, when Manning was there, of course, Manning is too, but the highlights of him throwing it to someone, you know, and the receiving
yeah.
end of that is all these receivers catching all of Manning's passes. They're getting into, you know, the top 10 plays, and, you know, and they're getting all highlights on SportsCenter and shit. And so they're getting notoriety. And, you know, and of course,
right.
a lot of them have these incentive clauses in their contracts. They're making money off of it, you know, because Manning's throwing
yeah.
to them.
Well, they made Decker, the receiver that went to the Jets from Indy, he made him a lot of money. I mean, you know, that guy
who's
he would have been playing with Decker, the white
oh,
receiver
right,
from
right.
that
Eric
went to
Decker,
the Jets.
Yeah.
Eric
yeah.
Decker, he got a shit. He got a shitload of money for. I mean, you know, he's okay, but he ain't that good. And
no.
You know, Peyton Manning, he owes Peyton Manning a lot because man, he made him a lot of money.
Yeah,
he caught a lot of passes. You know, he's going to go to the Jets, dude, and he's going to be catching from Dingle Fritz over there. The
who knows?
I came,
who
the,
knows?
The black
who?
Dude,
the dude from
I,
West
I
Virginia, Geno Smith.
Yeah,
Geno Smith.
He's
Sanchez isn't with him anymore, is he?
No, they got rid of him. Sanchez.
Finally,
so
who did they sign
in
the play? They just signed somebody.
Philadelphia signed Sanchez.
But somebody
signed
the Jets just
Sanchez.
Signed somebody to battle against Smith because Smith isn't doing great either. And I forgot
yeah,
who the hell they
Vic.
Signed.
They signed Michael Vick.
That's right.
So basically, Vic and Sanchez swap teams.
Yeah.
So I know.
Well, you know, man,
I don't think he's very good.
You see these running quarterbacks, and they just can't make it in the NFL for very long. Even Vic, who's a massively
yeah.
huge guy. And even like Kaepernick,
yeah.
who can run like a motherfucker, but eventually that's just going to catch up to him because, you know, there's plenty of guys on the field in the NFL that are as quick as they are, and it's just going to take a few, you know, some fucking head clearing hits to
yeah.
have them figure out that they can't do that forever. Kaepernick maybe, I don't know, man. He does kind of look like a running back a little bit, but it's still. You can't do that forever in the NFL because that shit catches up
running
with
back,
you.
Though.
What's that?
Running backs run. Running backs, it's totally different running as a running back and as a quarterback.
Right.
Running backs, they cover up and they protect themselves when they're running. Quarterbacks
yep.
run and they got their arms cocked and their ribs are exposed and they get
yeah.
they get hit awkwardly and they just it's not you can't run the ball 20 times a game as a quarterback and expect to last
yep.
long. It's just, all these running quarterbacks, you know, they might have success for a year or two or whatever, but over the long term. You're not going to see some running quarterback play for 17, 18 years. It ain't going to happen. It's just they get too beat up.
It makes me wonder about Kaepernick, man. I mean, the dude is huge, and he's buff as a motherfucker. I mean,
he
can't keep doing it. There's no way.
Well, the biggest running quarterback is Cam Newton, and he's already had surgery. He's already
yep.
getting hurt. So, I mean,
yep.
he's like 250 pounds. He's solid, and he's already
yep.
getting beat up. So, I mean, it's just. You know, it's hard enough to play it when you're trying to protect yourself and not running, but then you're going to, you know, run. Most of the guys aren't running a lot anymore. Even like Russell Wilson, he's not really a running quarterback. He scrambles for Seattle, but, you know, he'll only run when he has to. He don't run a lot of read options. It's not like design run plays. He just scrambles and tries to get out of bounds, but, you know, he's not a big guy either, and, you know, shit. You know, he runs like Vic used to run all the time, just take off. And he took a lot. He's not as big as you think either. He's only like 6 foot, about 207, 208, 209 pounds. He's not huge, so I mean,
yeah.
You know, he took a lot of beatings. You know, so
well look at Manziel. Makes me it's got to make you question
yeah,
Manziel, man. And, I mean, that's his style. He's an out of pocket passer. He's a runner. You know. And he's going to get crushed, and he's not that big at all. He is going to get crushed in the NFL.
He has very narrow shoulders, I noticed. His shoulders are, like, really little, his shoulders. I don't know if you ever
yep.
look at him. Yeah, but he doesn't have big, broad shoulders. He's not 6 foot. He's just under 6 foot. I guess he's got real big hands, which is good for quarterbacks. That's one of the main things for quarterbacks, how big their hands are. And, you know, he may be, I predict he'll probably be good early. You know, he'll get people like, whoa, look at this, look at that. He'll make a bunch of big plays when he's first year or so. But after like 2, 3, 4 years, I think he'll start getting beat up and stuff. Especially
yeah.
If he's lucky
to make it that long, I mean, all it takes is one massive hit, right? You know, whatever. He's running right along the sideline, you know, whatever happens, and him scrambling out of that pocket all the time. And that is his best quality, and it's something that, man, as an NFL quarterback, you know, it makes you not last long in the league. You know,
well, one thing that's different about him than Michael Vick and some of the other quarterbacks that do a lot of running is he can definitely throw the ball. I mean, he's pretty accurate. He makes awesome throws. That's one thing I'll say. He's got a nice touch. He throws. Yep. He's pretty accurate running and throwing. When he throws on the run, he's really accurate.
If they can use it for like rollouts and shit like that, you know, and use that to their advantage.
A lot of that.
But if they're going to depend on him scrambling out of the pocket all the time to make plays, whichever team drafts them, they're fucked. And he is too. Because he won't last long in the league.
You better have a good backup quarterback that plays the same kind of style he does, because he's probably going to see some action. You know?
Yep.
And I think that's the whole thing, and I think that's why the Texans don't want him number one overall, because they're like, we don't want to invest all this money in this guy. He is one scramble where he gets hit weird going out of bounds, you know, from being out of the game.
All over.
And they don't want to, and they don't want to waste a lot of money on a guy that's going to be running all the time. And that's why, I mean, you even seen it with Robert Griffin III, RG3,
right,
for Washington.
He's a perfect example of it.
First year, he has a great year, and then right at the end of the year, he gets hurt, you know, and blows out his knee, plays with a blown-out knee, then gets re-hurt, and then the next year he sucks, you know, because he lost his confidence to run. He lost his speed. He lost his confidence. So,
or maybe his ability. Who knows, man? Maybe he just can't run
like he used to
anymore.
He may never get it back. If he loses that speed, if he loses that 4.4 speed that he has, well, then at that point, he's just the average, you know, then he's relying more on his passing. Well, his passing was never, it was never incredible, you know. It was, you know, he was pretty okay, but he was never a traditional quarterback like that. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that they did on offense was based off his running, you know. So if you don't have that threat to run, he's going to be a lot less effective. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, that's why that Blake Bortles from UCF, man, he looks like your prototypical. He's an in-pocket passer.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. And I guess he didn't have a good pro day. He didn't have a great pro day. He didn't
His pro day was pretty good. The one that was real bad was Teddy Bridgewater, the little black guy.
Yeah, right.
His was horrible. Oh, his was horrible. I watched it. I actually watched it, Dennis, because, you know, I haven't been working, so I'm watching these pro days on ESPN during the day. And, man, I tell you what, I have never seen – like, Matt Stafford had an incredible pro day. There's been a lot of guys that, like, they go for, like, 59 out of 60 completions. And he missed – it seemed like there was one point where he missed like 4 or 5 passes in a row. Oh, they're showing it right now. I got the TV on right here, NFL channel. They're showing him missing passes. Teddy Bridgewater, they're interviewing him. And he looked horrible. They said part of the problem was he wore a glove when he played. And when he did his pro day, he didn't wear the glove. So he was having a hard time gripping the ball. That tells me you're stupid. Why wouldn't you wear the glove then? During your pro day, why would you do something different than you normally played with? And then it screwed him up, and then he got nervous, and then he got on camera after his pro day, and they said, "How'd you think he did?" When everybody knew he blew it, it was horrible. He goes, "I think I did great." I was watching him. I'm like, "You think you did great?" And I was like, "Man, he is. If he thinks he did great, he's delusional or he's crazy." Because I can tell. I mean, I'm no pro scout or nothing. I can tell. Man, he did terrible. I mean, it was bad.
Well,
bad,
you know,
bad.
He's not going to come out and be like, "Man, I stunk the fucking joint up. I suck. Don't grab." You know, he's right at this point.
Yeah.
He's propping his brand name. You know, he's trying to.
Yeah.
He's that's all for the ching. You know, he's trying to move keep his draft viable there.
From
what I heard, he went from 1 to 2 in the quarterback prospects down to 3, 4, and even 5. Man, that's how bad he was in his pro day.
Yeah, they're a lot of people are rating him like 3 to 5 now, or even somebody had him at 6. I think 6 best quarterback. Now some people are saying he probably won't even go in the first round. So he might end up going in the second round now. That's how far he slipped. But I mean, he did good at Louisville. You know, they didn't have the hardest schedule, but you know, he was good at Louisville. You know, he had played some good games. I've seen him. I'm not going to sit here and lie. say I saw him play a lot, but I did watch him in one game, and he was okay. But I wasn't. To me, he reminds me of old quarterback Achilles Smith from the Cincinnati Bengals, a black quarterback on the same size as him. It was great in college. He had great college stats. He looks like him to me. He throws like him. And when he came into the NFL, he was horrible. And he reminds me of was Achilles Smith.
Yeah.
So, I mean, It's funny how those dudes bomb.
I was looking at a picture, I think it might have been today, and they're showing some of the previous drafts, and they had Ryan Leaf next to Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
You know, standing in the same draft. If you can't get two polar opposites there, man.
Oh, I know.
That was one of the biggest bombs in history, I think.
And they didn't know at the time. I mean, they thought they were 1-2. I mean, there was a lot of people that were going to pick Leaf over Manning.
Yeah.
They thought Leaf had had a higher upside, a higher ceiling.
Yep.
And he had, his arm was stronger. He was a little younger. You know, he was bigger. I think he was actually a little bigger than Manning. I think he was like 6'6". Manning might be 6'6". They were about the same size. But I mean, he had all the tools and everything. But he was a jackass. I don't know if you ever heard the story. They said they asked him, "What are you going to do when you get your first check or whatever, your signing bonus?" He said, "I'm going to Vegas." That's what he said, and they were like, uh oh. So that was like,
I'm going to Vegas
like
and pick me up some hookers
party.
and shoot
party.
Up some heroin. You got a problem with that?
Yeah. He wanted to go to Vegas to get some women.
That dude didn't last long at all, man. You know, and they're talking about Derek Carr too, and I don't know. I mean, you know, He played for Fresno State, you know, and he looks like a good quarterback. He's a pretty, you know, natural passion. That Todd McShave, you know, from ESPN, he is down on that. He keeps saying that one of his indications of a good what's going to make a good pass in the NFL is how they handle plays under duress. You know, they're being chased.
Yeah.
He says that he handles it like shit. He doesn't do well, and he said every single quarterback that's been the case has not made it in the NFL. He said and he goes, "I'm going to stick to my guns here," because Carr's rated third, fourth at quarterback in the draft, and McShay's saying that he's not going to make it in the NFL. So
he's got a real good arm. Yeah, he's got a real good arm, and he put up great stats in college. But that's the thing, and I totally agree with McShay. When you watch his under-duress throws, he's not good. And that is the thing that I always said about Stafford, that he took a beating in college. He played against some of the toughest college defenses in the history of college football. He played against Florida when he was a freshman, sophomore, and a junior. And some of them defenses Florida had and Alabama had back then, they were like the best. They had so many NFL players on those defenses. And he would just – he didn't have a real good offensive line either. He took a beating, and he would stand in there, and he would just throw dimes, and he would, you know, keep them in the games. He didn't win all the games, obviously, but he won a lot of games. And he took a beating, and he would stand there. He had, like, no fear, and he was just he was really, really good under pressure. And I always thought to myself, I said, I watched him in college before the Lions picked him. I knew halfway through his junior season, and the Lions were having a bad year. You know, obviously they were losing all their games. And I was like, you know what, they're going to end up picking him number one. I knew that in the middle of that year before that 2009 draft. In the middle of the 2008 season, I knew they were going to pick Stafford. I was like, he's going to end up being – I watched him play. I go, he's going to be the number one overall pick. I just knew it. And he was. They ended up picking him, and I've always been behind him ever since. He's just got that coolness about him. He drops back in the pocket. He doesn't look like he's in a hurry. He doesn't look like he's panicking. He just kind of stands back there. He's like Joe Cool. You know, he looks around, and, you know, I mean, that was part of the problem. His first 2 years, he took too many hits. You know, he got – creamed too many times and he got hurt, but now he's getting the ball. He's getting rid of the ball a lot quicker, which lowers his completion percentage and causes some problems. But he's not taking the hits he used to take. So,
yeah, I tell you that game where that game where he hurt his shoulder and couldn't even move it. You could tell it was his non-throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
That was an amazing game. That was one of the most incredible games I've ever seen him, or maybe any quarterback for the Lions ever play. I mean, so
yeah.
I like Stafford. The problem I have is the last couple years, he hasn't had good years overall. He hasn't been solid. He hasn't been consistent. And either has Calvin Johnson, man. Johnson's been dropping passes in the end zone. He's been dropping passes that he should be catching. And I'm wondering what the hell's going on. I don't know what the fuck it is.
Well,
it's like just miscommunication or, you know, what it is. But they definitely are not playing up to their potential the last year or two.
Well, first let's put it in perspective. Stafford set an all-time record for yardage in the three-year period the last 3 years. Calvin Johnson, I think, has set records for receiving yardage the last 3 years. So
yeah, but they're not winning,
dude.
Records
don't mean a thing
if you're not putting W's in the column.
They're not winning, but let's not say they're not playing good. I mean, they've played bad at times, especially last year at the end of the year. But you got to look at Calvin Johnson too. He had two broken fingers. He had a knee injury. He played with the last half of the year. He had a knee injury. So I mean, you know, it's not like he was playing hurt. So, and they still, I mean, as far as stats go, I mean, they're putting up stats. If they keep going on the pace they are going and they play together 6 or 7 more years, they're going to own like almost every combination quarterback receiver record. You know, a duo together. Probably they'll probably break Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, because I think they own the records.
They might.
Like quarterback duo together, they might be able to break all those records.
I mean, that's
so, I mean,
the thing
just,
I got to give both of them, both Stafford and Calvin Johnson, Megatron, is they came to and re-signed to a notoriously bad team. So they're willing to stick it out, play their asses off, suck it up, and try and make something out of you know, the worst team in football for about a decade, you know. And they've turned it around. Certainly, they're not the worst team anymore. They're not winning a lot of games on occasion.
Yeah.
But it's all there. That's the thing that I think is most frustrating about the Lions now. Before, it was you knew they were going to lose. You know, I love the Lions. I still watch them whenever. Even when you knew they were going to lose, that they had, you know, the shitty quarterbacks and whatever else, you know. But now they've got so much fucking talent on the team, and they just they can't put it all together throughout an entire season. You know, they just can't string it and make it. I mean, they made the playoffs that 1 year, but, man, the last couple, you know, just the passing. Stafford looks a little off, and Megatron looks a little off, and that combined, you know, they're not hitting the way they're not in sync the way they should be.
Well, I will say this about the Lions. There's 53 men on a roster. Their top 10 players on their roster, I'll take their top 10 over any team in the NFL top 10 players. But their 11 through 53 players are not good enough. They just don't have enough. They don't have enough depth.
They're fucking defensive backs, man.
That's always
been the case with them too.
Yeah,
always.
Their secondary is not good enough. Their defensive line is pretty dang good, but they still need another pass rushing defensive end that can put some heat on. They need an outside linebacker. They need another good linebacker. They don't really have a lot of depth. You know, they're just
I'm always a homer about, you know, and I love. It was awesome seeing Delmas come out of Western Michigan where I went to school, you know, and graduate from, and see him come to the Lions. I love seeing that. And so was Scheffler also is from Western. But, you know, Delmas gets hurt all the time. He was just throwing his body everywhere, which is cool as hell. And he was a big hitter, but he wasn't a big dude.
Yeah, he's on Miami now, so. They Miami signed him. He was a free agent. So the Lions,
I don't blame him because he kept getting hurt. You know, I mean, the Lions had to get, you know, you never knew. I mean, he was only making 5-6 games a year, you know. So,
he played last year, but they definitely need some cornerbacks.
I don't think they think
his knee is going to hold up over the long term. That's why they didn't sign him, because he had that gimpy knee for a few years.
Yep.
So their secondary is real sketchy. They got a couple of good linebackers. Like I said, they got three really good defensive linemen. I mean, they got one. I mean, Sue is a beast. I mean, he's an animal.
You know what I think is going to have an awesome year this year is Ziggy Ansah. He's got a year under his belt. And I think he's going to come on this year and be crazy this year. Then you add Fairley into that, and you know I think the line's going to do all right. The defensive line, same as usual for me. My concern for the Lions is their secondary, man. If they can get a good signing or two, that would be nice to see. But I don't know.
Right.
I haven't heard of anything.
Yeah, well,
Golden Tate is a pretty good sign. You know, he's an older dude, but he's a good option for Stafford instead of Megatron. Hopefully, he'll draw some heat off of Megatron, and you know, maybe make some plays this year too.
Yeah.
So
he's got good hands. You're talking about Golden Tate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he's got good hands. They said he had the best. Best catch to drop rate in the league over the last 3 years, so he's definitely got good hands. Yeah, that's his strong trait. He's real strong. He's not real big or anything, but he's got very very good hands.
Yeah,
that's good.
So they need a third, and who's their third? Do you know their third receiver? Burleson's gone.
Their third receiver right now is probably Chris Durham, the big tall white guy.
Right,
so they don't really have a legitimate third receiver.
Yeah,
yeah.
Durham's okay, but he was dropping passes. He was Stafford's roommate in college, wasn't he?
They did room together, I think, for a year. Yeah,
I think they did. They knew each other, and I think Stafford's the reason he's on the Lions. Stafford told him to go after Durham.
I think so. Hey, Dennis, keep it going for a second. I'm gonna mute myself here for a second.
All right.
So, yeah, go ahead and ask questions or continue on.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't know. I mean, in general, I think, you know, I'm always optimistic about the Lions because of the talent they've got on their team. I think they have, you know, the ability to win games. It's just if they can put it all together. And Schwartz, really, I'm glad they fired Schwartz because he made me wonder in the last year. He made some bad decisions, and I wish I would have had those in mind again, but he made some really bad decisions that cost them, two games last year, one of which was not even knowing the rules with that with throwing the red flag when he wasn't able to anymore, and they called a penalty on him.
That was a couple years ago, yeah.
Was that a couple years ago?
He cost them like four games over the last 4 years. He's cost them four games by making stupid mistakes. He had the they played the Texans, the Houston Texans, where he threw the flag on that because it was a fumble or whatever. And he thought that they still should have the ball. Whatever, the guy picked up and ran back for a touchdown. And if he would have just let him review it, because they got to review every scoring play, they probably would have reversed it. But because he threw the red flag. That he got a penalty, then they didn't review it, and they gave him the touchdown. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, he cost them that game. And I'd say the other one, I'm pretty sure, was last year, and I forgot who the team was there playing.
That was Pittsburgh.
But, they were up, I think, by like 4 points, and they were going for a field goal, and they faked field goal on like the 10 or 15 yard line.
With the punter.
Which team was that?
With the punter. That was against Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, it was a shitty field.
And then Pittsburgh turns around, marches right down, scores a touchdown. They're up by three, which would have been the three that, you know. Oh, man, and I'm looking at that game. I'm watching cool, man. We'll be up by a solid 7 points. Easy field goal on the 15-yard line. And then he's got the motherfucker running right up the gut. The holder, this 120-pound dude running right up the gut trying to score a touchdown on a 15-20-yard field goal. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
I know. They were like six or seven yards out from the end zone, too. He had to run it through a bunch of guys, and there was no way he was going to make it. This is my theory, that if you noticed after that game, that the Lions kind of folded on Schwartz.
They
kind of turned on him.
They played
great up to that point, And after that Pittsburgh game, they started losing to teams that were way worse than them. They lost to Tampa Bay at home. They started playing real shitty. They started giving
their
no
back,
effort. They,
man. It broke
they
the
lost,
I think everybody on the team was like, what the fuck is he doing
just,
here? And when it didn't, you know, when it didn't
score.
Go, and then Pittsburgh turns around
right.
and scores that fucking touchdown, right, drove
they,
right back down the
no
field
business.
Again after they stopped
they
him
no
to, with the fake field goal. It was all over. That was like the end of their season right there. That was
they
it.
Had no business losing that game. They had that game. They had that game. They had outplayed Pittsburgh that whole game, and they had no business, and they knew they should have won that game, and Schwartz lost that game to him. And it wasn't just that game. He's lost three or four games on stupid calls like that throughout the years he coached. And after that game, the Lions totally changed. Like, the defense played with no heart. They lost to the Giants. The Giants were probably one of the worst teams in the league last year. They were horrible. They lost, like 10-7. They lost to the Giants. It was a joke. And then they lost. I went to the Ravens game, the Monday night game. They lost to the Ravens. They should have won that game. They should have beat the Giants in the last game of the year because it didn't mean anything. They basically just gave. They lost, like, 7-6 to Minnesota. Minnesota was putrid.
They didn't have a starting quarterback the whole damn year, man, and the Lions lost.
They just gave up. They just quit. I really believe they quit on Schwartz, and that's my opinion. That's why I think this year they're going to be a lot better because they're not going to quit on a first-year head coach. They're going to play hard for Jim Caldwell.
You know, he's won a Super Bowl. He's been there before.
Yeah.
You know, maybe been with
Schwartz,
kind of a different, you know.
Year.
Yeah. So I hope so. It'd be good to see it, you know. I think they try. I mean, there were some good signs with them. I wasn't down on Schwartz when he first came in. He looked good. Mm-hmm. And he had a winning attitude. He didn't come in to saying, "Oh, we're rebuilding," or "We hope, you know, hopefully we'll go 500." He came in saying, "We're gonna win some playoffs and we're gonna win the Super Bowl." And I like that. I mean, you know, you gotta think that way, you know. But
he definitely
caused them some fucking games the last couple of years. Just killed
him. That's what he said at his press conference. He said,
7 years of college down a drain.
That was him for sure.
They couldn't have done anything better
than gotten rid of that fucking Matt Millen, dude. He was the worst of the worst. Four straight wide receivers drafted in four straight years. I mean, we did get Megatron out of that. But you can't – I mean, how the fuck can you draft the exact same position every year for 4 years? What the fuck?
You know what?
And then they drafted that fucking Mike Williams. He'd been out of football for a year. No one ever comes back to the NFL after being out a year in football like that.
You know how
and of course, he was a boss.
You know how you draft four bust receivers in a row or three, then Calvin Johnson? This is how you do it.
Down a beer? 7 o'clock in the morning. Scotch?
That's how you do it. You start drinking scotch at 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
I tell you, he was goofy. And here, let's get into some of the things about, you know, the thing about Millen is, I said Schwartz was smart too, but Millen was a Mensa member. I mean, the guy wasn't stupid, but, you know, he was a four-time Super Bowl winning player. He played on three different teams that won Super Bowls, and he won four Super Bowls. He played on Washington, Oakland, San Francisco. He was on some of the best teams in the 80s.
Yeah, I remember with the Raiders.
He was with also the 49ers and Washington.
Yep.
And he was smart, but the thing is he was a goofball, man. I mean, he went on Chicago radio, and he was talking with Mike Dick on Mike Dick's show, and he was calling Johnny Morton gay. He was joking about Johnny Morton. You remember Johnny Morton, the receiver?
He was basically,
and they were yucking it up, man. Him and he's with the enemy, yucking it up about one of his star receivers being gay, joking about him being a fat,
he's a dumbass,
calling him a fag,
man.
Basically.
I can't even watch him on TV now. He comes on to do analysis. He's still a broadcaster. And every single thing he says, I he's like Bush. I can't believe a word he says now.
Yeah.
You know, like W.
Oh, yeah.
Anything he says is a total bullshit coming from his mouth because, it's been proven the fucker doesn't know anything about running a team.
He's probably the worst
general manager ever in the NFL ever was Millen.
Yep.
So when they fired him, that was the big step forward for the Lions, was getting rid of that fucker and finally cleaning house and getting rid of him. Because Marty Morningweg,
totally
he's hiring all these coaches that didn't know what the fuck they were doing. Wasn't it Marty Morningweg he was the coach that deferred the kickoff, wasn't it, in overtime?
Yeah, in overtime.
And
yeah,
then they fucking ran it back
Chicago
for a touchdown in overtime after he deferred
the
kickoff?
I think they went right down and kicked the field goal is what it was. But,
oh, did they?
Yeah, they
I knew they went down and won it.
That's another thing. Can we get – there was like a 10-year period in there where everybody's names were M names. It was Matt Millen, Marty Morningweg, Mariucci, Marinelli, all these M names, man. It was all these M names in their coaches and general managers and Mayhew. Martin Mayhew is the assistant GM. Now he's the GM. Everybody's MM. I was like, can we get a fucking GM or a coach that doesn't have an M name? I'm getting sick.
Somebody
learn
the fucking alphabet, for fuck's sake.
I know.
I'll get someone with a different name.
Get Joe Blow in there. I don't care. I'm so sick of all these M names constantly. It was just getting sick.
Yeah.
And it was like one guy after another. It was like, and I'll tell you the main culprit, Matt Millen, was horrible. And I will admit, he was, and they said that a lot of times they would counsel him, say, hey, we want to pick this guy. Don't pick. And he would be like, I'm going to pick this guy. And they'd be like, don't do it. No, no, no. And they would say, this is the guy at this spot. And he would go against what they were telling him, the scouts and the GMs and everything. The pro personnel people were telling him, hey, don't pick Mike Williams. They told him, don't pick Mike Williams. They said, don't pick him. And he'd be like, no, we're going to pick him. I mean, it was just,
horrible.
I got a feeling. But anyways, the main culprit of that 2008 0-16 team, and I was there in Green Bay in the freezing cold at Lambeau Field, and I watched that 16th loss. I mean, people were patting me and my wife on our backs, rubbing our backs. They were giving us jello shots. They felt so bad for us. I said, man, they're going to win this game. They're not going to go 0-16. They've got to win it. I said, even if Green Bay gives it to them, they're going to win it. And for a while, I was like, they're going to win. Then at the end, they pulled away at the fourth quarter. I was like, shit. But the main culprit of that 0-16 season was not Millen. It was Marinelli. Marinelli, the coach, was the one that got rid of all the best players from 07. He didn't like Sean Rogers. He thought he was fat and lazy. He didn't like Dre Bly, the corner. He got rid of all their good starters, and he brought in all those backups from Tampa Bay and St. Louis, all those second-string players, and they filled in all the starters with second-stringers from these other teams, and they sucked ass. None of those players they brought in did any good. They were all horrible. And I really think that Marinelli was the one that he never did anything except for be a good defensive line coach in Tampa Bay when he was coaching Hall of Famers like Warren Sapp and everybody. He hasn't done crap in Chicago. He hasn't done crap in D's in Dallas. He hasn't done crap in Dallas. Look how bad Dallas' defense has gotten since he's went down there. He's just horrible to me.
Yeah.
And they always talk about how great a coach he was and how – he was such a good position coach. Everybody tried so hard for him. But he got rid of them. He didn't want those guys. He didn't want anybody that thought they were good. He wanted all those try-hard guys that would come in there and bust their ass and do what he said and just kill themselves and run through a wall for him. But he got rid of all the talented guys. He didn't keep anybody that was good.
You can't lay it all on the coach either because it's not solely his decision.
Yeah, but he was the one that got rid of those players. Yeah, but he got rid of those guys. That was his.
Yeah,
that was his baby.
The coach can't just go off and make trades and willy nilly. I mean, usually those decisions are made. Those decisions are made with the GM, almost always, especially when you're cutting.
I got some inside knowledge. He got rid of those guys. That was Marinelli. Marinelli got rid of them guys. He didn't like them.
But again,
they were the higher paid players.
I mean, who's the boss? In the end, if Matt Millen had a problem with that, he would say he could have negated any of that shit if he wanted to.
Yeah, well, he could have, but he didn't because he's stupid and he doesn't know what he's doing either. So, Yeah.
You know,
Matt
Millen sat on
that
fucking board for Jerry, what's his name, from Penn State, too. Jerry Sandlin.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck's his name? Man, I forgot
Jerry
his name already. But anyway,
Sandusky.
He was on the board of directors
Jerry
of... what's that? Sandusky, yeah.
Jerry,
he was
Jerry
on the board
Sandusky.
Of directors of that fucker's, you know, charity. So...
Right.
He
yeah,
had a
right.
lot... He's had some reality, some serious reality checks over the last few years, man, you know, being booted from the Lions and,
yeah.
and you know, the Sandusky thing. Sandusky was like his mentor, his teacher, one of his, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So,
right.
So you know, Millen's had some long, hard looks in the mirror, I imagine, over the last year or two,
yeah.
thinking, what the fuck, is, you know, have I done?
when they used to shower with the with the young kids in the friggin' the football players' locker room.
Yeah, but I tell you what, that whole situation, man, with Penn State, those fuckers should have gotten the
horrible.
Death sentence. Just like, I mean, LSU got the death sentence for fucking recruiting violations, or SMU,
yeah.
Southern Methodist.
SMU, yeah.
Yeah, they got, I mean, they were knocked out of college football for years just for recruiting violations. Penn State's got some sort of, you know, pedophilia program going on, which, of course, everyone knew about. There's no fucking way those coaches didn't know about that. And, you know, and they don't do almost anything, man, to Penn State. And, in fact, they rewarded the fucking players by putting their names on their backs and shit. And, oh, you know, you stick around with our program and you get your name on the back of the jersey, which we haven't ever done before.
Right.
And, you know, fucked up. So I, you know, it's crazy shit. But I think they should have gotten a death sentence. They should have been knocked out of college football for about 5 years, man. Didn't happen.
Yeah,
so,
you know, they got all the people trying to save Joe Paterno's legacy. Fuck that.
Well,
you know,
mainly his family,
you know.
Still. You know, his family's somewhat involved with Penn State still, and they're suing him and saying it didn't happen the way, you know, fuck if Paterno didn't know about it. Hey, Sandusky's fucking those kids in the shower and no one knows.
That was like his best buddy too.
Yeah.
You know, Sandusky. They were like you know, that was the thing about the whole reason why they didn't do anything to him was because he controlled all that. He had a lot of donations. He had some kind of, I don't know if it was a slush fund or I don't know what it was. He had some fund with millions and millions and millions of dollars in it that he controlled Sandusky and his charity through there and everything. And
well,
and
it tells you
a,
that the football team ran that fucking university instead of vice versa. You know,
well,
they were the ones running everything about the gig, and you know, they just let Paterno do whatever the fuck he wanted, and part of it was let a pedophilia go free, even though he knew what was going on.
I mean, what a grown man and a young boy doing a shower, that's no business. That's not my business.
Right.
I don't want to know about that. I mean, you know, what they do.
That doesn't normally happen?
Business.
I thought that happens all the time.
They're just playing a little grab ass in there. There ain't nothing, you know.
That rhythmic slapping coming from the shower, I thought they were just, you know, putting soap on each other.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't that a daisy?
Yeah.
Well, so who do you got for a sleeper for your draft? You got any sleepers for quarterbacks?
Talking about for Lions? Oh.
No, just in general. Just coming out of the draft, this year's draft for quarterbacks. I think my sleeper's this dude from Eastern Illinois. Is that Jimmy
Garoppolo.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, there's been some good quarterbacks coming out of the MAC, dude. They almost went undefeated last year. And
right.
I'm not saying he's going to come out and be a superstar his first year in the league. I think he might develop into a good quarterback after his second, third, fourth year. You know, who knows though? I mean, if he's put in, you know, he gets drafted by like, you know, the Vikings or something. The Vikings need a quarterback bad. I mean, or whoever.
Well,
you know, he gets put in. You never know. I mean, you know,
Roethlisberger
came from the MAC, and
they're not going to pick him at number 8, though. They would
he must be a second rounder or something, third round. You know, he won't be first rounder, I don't think.
If you say a sleeper for quarterback, I like the I'm trying to think of his name. The guy from Pitt.
Tom Savage.
Yeah. I think he's got probably one of the best arms in the draft, just for pure passing. But he's a little bit of a weird guy. I don't know. He bounced around from college to college, so that might not be a good sign. But just for pure passing and throwing the ball, I like how he throws. He's got a nice arm. He's got a whip. And I could see him maybe going in the second or third round and catch down with somebody, maybe starting a year or two down the road, you know. But I don't really love any of the quarterbacks. I will say one thing. Depending on where he goes, if Johnny Manziel goes to if he went to Minnesota, I could see him for his first year or so totally turning them around and winning quite a few games with like Minnesota. Now if he goes to like Jacksonville at number three, I don't think he'll do great there. But if he goes to like even the Texans, but I know the Texans aren't going to draft him number one. I'm pretty sure they're not going to. But if he goes to a decent team that has some pretty good offensive players, I think he could start off doing pretty good. I think I could see him winning, you know, 8-9 games, even maybe 10 games his first year if he could play the whole year. So I think he could come in and run around. He'll probably run for 5, 6, 7 touchdowns. He'll throw for like 20 touchdowns. Maybe like 3,500 yards if he plays the whole year. He'll run around a lot.
Wow.
And he'll win.
Shot
you know,
the Pro Bowl first year, huh? Shit.
Not Pro Bowl, but I could see him win. You know what's going to happen? I could see him winning 8 or 9 games, maybe even 10, and they're going to, you know, say, hey, he's so great. He'll be like RG3, how he was his rookie year. But then if he gets banged up and hurt, if he can't keep healthy, it ain't going to matter. And that's the whole thing you know, take with a small guy like that. Let me throw out the number here one more time, Dennis. If you guys want to call in, you got a question, comment, you just want to debate us on anything NFL draft related we're talking about now or NFL related or the Lions history or if we've said something that you don't agree with or something you want to add to, just call us at 646-595-4686. We've got about a half hour left, and we're just shooting the shit basically like we're sitting around at a bar, you know, just talking about draft and Lions and stuff. And you know, Dennis just posed the question, if you got a sleeper quarterback, who is he? Who do you think maybe might come out and be maybe a surprise starter early in his NFL career? Maybe Tom Savage. He said Jimmy Garoppolo from Eastern Illinois. You know, he had a good, I think it was his junior or senior year, but his last year, 2013, he had a really good year. There's some quarterbacks that, you know, the quarterback stock this year is definitely better than last year. Last year was a terrible year for quarterbacks. There wasn't really much coming out.
The running back class looks kind of weak, man. I don't know. I mean, they're talking about Carlos Hyde from Ohio State being the top prospect. I'm looking at a list here. You know, they got Jeremy Hill from LSU, ranked second.
Here's my sleeper. You want a sleeper running back?
Yeah,
running back.
Yeah.
I'll give you a sleeper running back.
All right.
Listen to this name. You might hear this name. At the top of the fourth round, you'll be able to get him too, probably. West Virginia, Charles Sims. Throw back the old Billy Sims. Charles Sims can catch the ball good. He's big. He's fast. Catches the ball good. He runs a little upright, but he's got a lot of shimmy. He can shimmy and shake. He takes good angles. He makes good cuts. He's got good soft hands. I think he's about 212 pounds, about 6 feet tall. So he's not little. And I think he could be a good running back. I think he could be a sleeper running back, like a starting NFL good running back.
Yeah, they got him ranked here as 10th. He's got a 4.48 in the 40. That's pretty damn good.
He's not slow. Yeah, he's not slow.
Yeah.
He's not a real quick move guy. But I think he could be pretty good. I think he could be kind of like Arian Foster from the Texans.
He could be
that kind of running back.
Yeah.
So
it's a weak class of running backs when the dude ranked fifth, at least on this list. This is WalterFootball.com. It's a pretty good extensive list of the NFL. But the guy ranked fifth in their list of running backs is from Towson. Towson University.
Oh, he's good. Yeah, but that
I know,
guy,
but you
he's
know,
a little, he's a little beast, man. Oh yeah,
yeah.
He's a little beast.
Terrence West.
That's predicted him to be pretty good.
But you know,
yeah,
that's always a risk, man. When you get a running back from a smaller school, you know, they don't play with the big boys a lot of times, man. You know, and they get into the NFL and they're a lot quicker and a lot bigger, and they got to show something, you know, real quick, like, yeah.
From Townsend State, 5 foot 195 pounds. What's his first name? Something West.
Terrence West.
Terrence,
they're saying he's 225. He's 5'9". 225.
Holy shit.
What the fuck is that?
225.
He got lost behind the offensive line, man.
He's got to be 205. He's not 225.
That's what
it
says here, 225. 5'9", 225. He's got a 4.54 or 40 time.
Wow.
So that's not bad for
that big.
Yeah. That's what it says. I don't know if it's – everybody else is right around 206, 207. He's 225.
Wow, that's big for that size.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So I don't know. I mean, if they're in need of a running back, the dude in ranked ninth here is from Colorado State, which I've seen a few of their games when I lived out in Fort Collins. You know, that's where they're out of is Fort Collins, Colorado State. And they got Sonny Lubick, you know, used to be the coach there. He was the one that first turned them around. They were one of the worst teams in college football, and Lubick kind of turned them around a little bit.
Turned them around big time. They had great teams for years.
Yep. So, but they got a guy, Capri Bibbs, I guess, that's out of Colorado State. He's ranked ninth. They rank him above that Charles Sims that you were talking about. From West Virginia.
Huh.
But either way, man, none of these running backs seem to be getting a whole lot of press from anybody, you know, just in terms of their potentials and all. So we'll see if any of them kind of shines once they get to the NFL.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't think, like I said, it's not a super strong running back class, but I think there's a lot of good, solid, you know, they could at least come in and be good backups. You know, you can get them in middle rounds. Some of the guys might end up being starters. But I'm going to tell you one thing. I mean, I like Reggie Bush and the Lions guy. I mean, he's a name guy and everything. But he is not the game breaker that he used to be. He's not.
No.
He's lost a lot of his speed, man, and he doesn't run really hard. He's not a real tough runner, and he's an okay receiver, and he's got a lot of shimmy to him and shake still, but he's just not a game breaker. He doesn't have the speed that he used to have.
Running back, man. I mean, he looked a little bit tougher last year, but you can't run him up the gut, man. He gets stood up so much at the line when they try and do that, and he's good for the. He's good for the screens and the outside, the sweeps and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But him head on with any of the defense, and he seems to stop in his tracks. You know,
right?
I mean, if someone's meeting him head on, he doesn't bowl him over. That's for sure.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't break a lot of arm tackles and stuff.
No,
but now here's the bad thing.
I like that Jacque Bell, man, from Wayne State.
Yeah, well,
the hometown boy.
Here's the thing.
That dude's a badass, man. He runs people over.
Well, here's the thing. He hasn't practiced in any of the mini camps, and they're saying he's got a knee injury.
Really?
They signed him for pretty big money.
Damn.
Yeah, he went to my daughter's school, Wayne State. He was from Wayne State.
Uh-huh.
And, so now they think he'll be all right for, you know, the summer for training camp, but he's suffering from some kind of knee injury. So the Lions may end up taking a running back in the fourth round. They got three fourth-round picks, so they might take one of those mid-level running backs in the fourth round. I mean, they have three fourth-round picks.
Well, they probably should anyway.
One of them a running back.
Bush is getting old, one way, you know, and he's prone to get hurt.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
I
you know, they need a second. It seems like almost every NFL team now is almost doing a two-running-back system nowadays. So
two or three,
for at least two. And, it wouldn't be a bad idea for the Lions to try and, you know, find a gem in the later rounds that might help out in a couple of years in a jam.
Bring back a Sims.
Yeah.
That's my sleeper running back. But, yeah. Yeah, Alex Sims.
Yeah.
But
maybe they'll listen to you, man. You never know.
Yeah. I think my dream draft, I think I wrote it today on Facebook, would have been the Lions trade down three spots from 10 to 13 in the first round to trade down with St. Louis to pick up an extra third round pick, which they could probably get for doing that. And then take Aaron Donald, defensive tackle from Pitt. He's the best defensive tackle in the draft. He's like a short guy, but he's just like he's a maniac. He's like a Tasmanian devil. They call him a bowling ball with butcher knives is basically how I describe his play. And he's really good. He had a great, you look at his stats were as good or better than Ndamukong Suh's stats in college.
Huh.
And he's a little undersized, but I think, you know, with both Sue and Fairley being, their contracts being up after this year, if they got him, he'd be a good insurance policy. Plus, he'd be great depth because they basically rotate four guys in there anyways when they play. They don't play the whole game. The defensive tackles, they rotate them a lot. So you get him, and then I think in the second round I wanted Jimmy Ward, which is he's a good cover safety from Louis. I think he plays for Louisville. He was really good. Not Louisville. I'm thinking of the other safety. He doesn't play for Louisville. He's one of the Illinois schools, like offhand. I can't remember. You look up Jimmy Ward. I think he's ranked third for safeties, but I think they can get him in the top of the second round. And I like him. He's a good cover. He's probably the best pure cover safety in the draft. He's kind of small, but they said he can cover slot receivers and stuff, so he's really good. And I was like, pick three would be my first pick. Three would be Vannoy, the linebacker. I think it's BYU. So I'm just guessing schools now. who did I have? I wish I would have wrote this down. I'm trying to go off.
Yeah, Jimmy Ward's from Northern Illinois.
Yeah, Northern Illinois. Yeah.
Another Mac
Illinois
school.
Well. Yeah, well, he's really good. He's a great cover guy. And then
The MAC, you know, and that's where I went to school again. Western Michigan is part of the MAC, but so is like Kent
yep.
State, Northern Illinois, Ohio University,
yeah.
Toledo, Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan is in the MAC. They've added some, like Buffalo is now in the MAC. And I believe,
yep.
Who else did they just add? Somebody on the East Coast.
Temple.
So it's a pretty big conference nowadays. And what's
yeah.
helped them out is they're playing all of the prime teams in college football nowadays. So, like, Western
yeah.
is going – they're getting rolled over by Michigan every
yeah.
year, but
yeah.
it's going to help them out in the long run, you know, and give them exposure
yeah.
and experience playing the big boys, you know. And some of them,
we'll
they
like
you know, every once in, you know, every once in a while, man, there'll be an upset with one of those MAC schools, you know, like Central beat Michigan State a couple years ago. To kick the season
yeah.
off,
right.
you know, shit like
yep.
that. So, you know, I think they're
yep.
going to do nothing but get better, and you're going to see more.
Central beat Michigan State twice.
What's that?
Central beat Michigan State twice,
yeah.
two times in 3 years.
yeah.
Yeah.
So they're, and you know,
Buffalo gave Buffalo last year gave Ohio State all they could handle.
Yep.
So when they had that, they had Khalil Mack. That he's supposed to be one of the top players drafted. He's a really good linebacker, defensive end from Buffalo. He's awesome, and he had a hell of a game against Ohio State at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think Basically. We're just going to start seeing better and better football out of the MAC, man. And you know, you're going to see
yeah.
better players come because they're in. You know, they're on nationwide TV now. They play, you know, the Big Ten, and you know, they're you know, you're able to catch them. Pretty much anywhere at least the beginning of the year nowadays. So
you know why they're getting better now? It's because they limited the number of scholarship players that the big teams could keep. Now they only can keep like 85 or something, and they used to be able to keep like you know 100 and something. And so now a lot of those they lost like 20 of those players. And they're good players, and so they can't carry as many players, so they go to you know smaller schools.
So
that's what's happening.
Yeah,
that started
sure.
happening about 15 years ago. I think they put that rule into effect where they limited the scholarships. So that's what's going on.
Well, you know,
what's
his name was from Western also. Played for the Packers. Jennings, is that it?
Greg Jennings. Yep.
He's with the Vikings now. But you know, he had all those great years with the Packers. He was from Western Michigan. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few of them coming out. Like I said, Delmas I mentioned earlier, and Scheffler, they're both on the Lions. Delmas is, like says, in Miami now. But so.
Five, 10 years ago, Western had some good teams, man. They were really good.
They did. They had a couple prime quarterbacks that were, you know, on the edge of maybe being drafted, and they never were. I don't think they ever did, you know, were ever brought into the league. But they used, you know, what they used to have. I tell you, when I was going to school, was a linebacker that played for Miami, and he was an animal, but he got hurt in the first 3-4 years he was playing. He was a middle linebacker. I want to say Zach Thomas, but that's not right.
No.
But he got hurt. He had a longer name. What the hell was that? But that dude was an animal. I think he may have even made the Pro Bowl one year with Miami. He was really good, too. So, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Max
been definitely raising their level of play, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
Who are you calling? Who are you calling for the Super Bowl? Let's hear it here. What's your two teams for the Super Bowl?
I can't make no predictions.
Come on, let's hear
it.
Gotta
go through the draft. Shit, I gotta see the draft first. I can't make no Super Bowl predictions.
Oh man, come on.
I would. We'll have this Wednesday before the opening day NFL. Before the first week, we'll have another. Segment on that. We'll make predictions then. I'm not gonna make no predictions now. Shit, I'll make a prediction. I'll put it on tape. Put it on wax.
What the dude was? John Offerdahl. You remember that dude?
Oh, okay.
John Offerdahl. Yeah, he was really good for a few years. Got hurt pretty fairly soon, like third, fourth year in the league. But he was massive for the Dolphins for a bit, and he came out of Western. So, but yeah, man, I don't know. Yeah, all right. We'll make a prediction on some Super Bowl. But you know, you gotta stick your neck out every once in a while, man. Come on.
Well, I'm not gonna do it now. I gotta at least go through the draft. You know.
All right.
Can't just make no predictions now.
I would see Denver back in the Super Bowl again. That would be one of my picks, at least from the AFC. Most everybody returning, and Welker's still there, and you know, Manning's going to probably throw for another close to 5,000 yards, and you know.
That's if he stays healthy, though. You know.
Yeah.
He's like 37, 38 now, so
right.
you never know.
You can say that about anybody in the NFL, at quarterback or running back.
That's true.
They all have a chance of going down at some time.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. That Super Bowl, it was just so bad. It was
great
it was
from the
get-go, massive,
man.
It was a massacre.
Snap right over Manning's head. They could have called the game right then. They could have been like, all right, we're done. That was it. That was the epitome of the whole game, really. Seahawks were tough, though, man. I mean, you can't, you know. They played tough all year long, had a great defense, and Wilson came out of the woodwork and had a solid year. Just, you know, in the last couple of years, he's come out of the woodwork. He had a solid year this year, and you know, who was the running back again? Who did they get for running back?
For Denver?
Seattle.
They had a decent running back.
I'm trying to think of who the other running back is. They had a solid team put together, man. You got to give it to Carroll, Pete Carroll.
About Lynch. Marshawn
Lynch.
Beast mode.
Yeah, he was
pretty good.
But, you know, what did
you think about Richard Sherman after the championship game against the 49ers when he interviewed him?
He talked a little too much shit, but, you know, whatever. And they made such a way too big deal out of it.
Yeah, he was going crazy. It was pretty funny.
He was kind of a dick about winning, you know, but I guess that was what from – you know, something that had gone on previously to the Super Bowl, and just kind of carried forward and shit. I don't know, you know.
He was talking shit to him at, I guess, at a charity golf outing in the summer or whatever, and they got into a fight there arguing, and then
really?
He was being a smart ass. Friday, oh yeah, it was the championship game, the NFC or NFC championship game. After they won, right at the end there, he tried to shake Michael Crabtree's hand, and Crabtree knocked his hand away.
Uh-huh.
And he was, you know, trying to be a smart ass, and then he gets the interview, you know, saying trying to guard me was a scrub like trying to play a scrub like Crabtree or whatever. It's a joke, and he's just yelling and everything. And
he was saying he's overrated and shit.
Yeah. This is the drop that came to mind when I was listening to that interview.
You certainly seem to be in touch with your anger.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Then they start calling him a foot thug on Twitter and everything and all that.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's graduated. He's got a degree from Stanford, you know, like 3.9 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's not stupid at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, he's a good success story to see, really. I mean, he came from Compton.
Yeah,
he was from Compton and graduated from Stanford. That's pretty sweet to see. I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment coming from that neighborhood, man. That doesn't happen very often, I can guarantee you that.
No.
There's not too many Stanford grads that grew up in Compton.
I'm sure you could count them on one hand if you even need to do that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a rough area. But yeah, that's one good thing about, you know, sports and stuff is, you know, you can give you a way to get out of that, you know. Have a, you know, not too many people are going to get friggin' scholarships on just, you know, scholastic merit, you know, from those areas. So,
yeah,
you know,
that and the military, man. It's about your two outs if you don't want to be, you know, living there the rest of your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair mark. March off to college. ROTC. Yeah. Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I'm trying to do a little different show than I normally do. I usually go down in the man cave, and I'm hunkered down there at the computer desk and everything. Tonight, I'm sitting in the Lazy Boy leaning back. Got the TV going in front of me, the nice TV. I got the beer sitting by me. I'm leaning back. Laptop on my lap. So.
I usually lock myself away, man. I can't have a TV in front of me if my mind wanders and shit while I'm on here. But yeah, usually I'm kind of locked away in a back room in our back office, and you know,
speaking of mind wandering, I'm looking at Mike Mayock's new mock draft that just came out. He has Aaron Donald from Pitt going 24th. So me predicting the Lions trading down to 13 and picking him doesn't look like a good deal. I guess he's got him on the 24th pick. So
What does he say the Lions are taking? Who's he say the Lions are taking?
I'd have to back up.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I think this one just came out. He just put this one out tonight. Let me see what he's got. Go back. He has got him taking Darqueze Dennard, Michigan State quarterback.
You know who we didn't we've gone through almost the whole show, dude, and we didn't even talk about Clowney.
Yeah.
What do you think about Clowney?
He's just great. I mean, the guy, he's an incredible talent. You know, they keep talking about he's lazy, this and that, but man, when I watched him, I went to USC for one semester back in the late '80s. And so I kind of follow, you know, Gamecock football a little bit, and I've seen him play quite a bit. And the guy is just amazing. I mean, he's a freak of nature, you know. He just, as long as he can, you know, keep a fire lit under him and stuff, and he doesn't get lazy, and, you know, when he gets money in the NFL, that's what you worry about. But, you know, I don't know, man. He doesn't seem like an idiot. I don't know. When you listen to him in interviews and stuff, he seems like a decent, you know, guy, and he's, you know, he's just a – I mean, the guy runs a 4.5 40 at 6'6", or 6'5 and a half. He's almost 270 pounds. He runs a 4.5 40. He's quick as a cat. You know, he's just great. For a defensive end, he's like the prototypical defensive end. So he'd be perfect for the Lions. I mean, with the way they play, what they do, he would be awesome on the Lions. I mean, the Lions would just – if they had him on the other side, on Ziggy – with those two defensive tackles, their defensive line would be just all-time great, stupid. It would just be awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know,
the only thing that bothered me, man, was that, I mean, he did say, I mean, he was out a couple games, and he didn't seem like he even wanted to fucking play for South Carolina last year.
I don't think that last year, I don't think he did want to play. So,
I think it goes back to your, you know, when he gets a little bit of money, man, what's going to happen to him? Is it, you know, is the motivation going to? I think he's going to be one of those where he's going to go in, try and prove he's going to be great for the first year or two, or maybe, you know, but maybe start having some character issues, and I think he's going to start trailing off because of, you know, off-field issues. He just doesn't seem like, you know, he's in it to play football with everybody else, you know? It's about him, and he doesn't give a shit about his team. And that kind of bothered me this last year, man.
He had a hell of a sophomore year. I mean, his sophomore
year
was awesome.
Yeah. You'll see that hit on, I forgot who it was for Michigan, the running back. But you'll see that forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an all-time classic hit for college football.
You know, there's been a lot of guys, the defensive ends that came out of college, and they've been labeled as lazy and not, you know, didn't give good effort and were hard to motivate. I mean, Bruce Smith was labeled that coming. I think he came out of Virginia Tech 25, 30 years ago. He's one of the all-time greatest defensive ends ever. He was labeled that. Javon Kearse was kind of labeled that too coming out of college. He was. You know, they said, well, he had the freak. They said that he had incredible skill, but he would turn it on and off. And can he flip the switch in the pros? And you know that they were saying he was kind of lazy too. And these guys all were pretty. Javon Kearse got banged up and stuff, but he was he came into the pros and he was pretty good. You know, so I mean, I don't know. I don't take that stuff too seriously. You know, but I mean. If he's picked number one overall, he's got to be great, though, you know. So, but I think he will. That's my prediction. Old DB, I think it'll be Javon Kearse will go number one to the Texans if they're picking there. They don't trade down, and I think you have to pick him.
We'll see.
They need a quarterback, but I just don't think. Their coach, the guy he came from Penn State, O'Brien. I don't think he likes Johnny Manziel. I mean, I just don't think he's the type of quarterback. He likes the big, tall pocket quarterbacks. Like he coached Tom Brady in New England.
Bortles.
That's what he likes. He doesn't like those. He likes the Bortles. Well, Bortles can run around too. He's mobile, but he's a bigger, you know, more pocket passer. But they're not going to take Bortles number one. If they take Bortles number one, I'll fall out of my chair. He just, you know, he'll be lucky if he goes in the top 10. So I don't know. I think the first quarterback will probably go maybe to Minnesota at 8, or Cleveland might take a quarterback at 4, but I don't know. I don't know. They might take Manziel, but I don't think their coaching staff likes Manziel either. So we'll see. You know, I don't know. But we're getting about ready to wrap it up here. You got anything else, Dennis? Draft preview show. Any last words?
I think that's it, man. I need another beer, so I'm gonna head on out.
Yeah, me too, brother. I'm gonna get another one of those Dragon Mead Final Absolution, and end up the night on that note. And on that note, the final absolution for this show.
All right,
show number 6. Show number 6. So we're gonna do lucky number 7 next week. And next week we'll hit all the current events hard again. We'll start pounding on religion again. We'll get back on track and get these jokers accountable. Maybe we can get together a little bit of the atrocities that religion is causing throughout the world. And we'll get a little some of the stuff that's going on. So, all right, brother, I'll see you at Old DB next week.
Sounds good, man.
Same bat channel. All right.
Adios,
muchachos.
Yeah.
Blister Fish Radio.
Hey, let me kill the lions today.